Are joined by Anya. Anya, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thanks very much for having me, Travin.
Great. Well, Anya is the Human Right to Health Program Director for the National Economic and Social Rights Initiative. They have a website, which you can find at nesri.org. That's N-E-S-R-I.org. And Anya and Nesri have been collaborating with the Healthcare as a Human Rights Campaign and the Vermont Worker Center here to put out a really serious study of, well, they call it a People's Budget Report. And they just issued their preliminary findings on Human Rights Day. That was December 10th. And I believe we're also joined by Peg Franzen. Peg?
Hello.
Hey, greetings. Okay, and Peg is the chair of the Vermont Worker Center and a leading organizer in the Healthcare as a Human Rights Campaign here. And here we are at a time when many Vermonters are in need of basics. Some are worried about keeping warm. Record numbers are lining up at the food shelves. The homeless shelters are overflowing. And meanwhile, the schools are cutting budgets. So you've decided to do some major research and issue this new report, which essentially, I believe, argues that, well, the report finds that public service cuts have hurt Vermonters and that Vermont is falling short on protecting economic and social rights. Anya, why don't you tell us something about the report and, you know, the thinking behind it?
Yes, I will do that. The report was motivated exactly in the way that you just introduced it, Travin. It was based on so many people coming to the Worker Center and talking about the struggles they face to meet their fundamental needs, such as healthcare, housing, education, and food, or a good job. And also by our collaboration with lots of folks working at the front line of providing public services that are essential for all of us, that we all use services related to education, to housing, to transport, medical services. And in all of those reports and stories, we heard that people are really struggling. They're struggling to provide the services, and they're struggling to get the services they need. And so we were fortunate enough to be accompanied by an advisory group of experts at the University of Connecticut and the University of Massachusetts, in addition to some other experts. So there was a whole group of us that came together and thought about what we needed to do to address those needs. And it was very clear from the outset, and the Vermont Worker Center had issued demands for the government to do something to meet those needs in a time where people increasingly rely on us, on society, to provide for the very essential things they need. We all need to eat. We all need to have a roof over our heads. And it's a pretty sad time in which so many people have those needs and they're not being met. So the Worker Center had called on the government to really do a better job to provide those services. And yet we saw that underfunding and understaffing continued. So we decided to take a really closer look at how the state of Vermont spends and collects their money, which is really our money. We're giving money as taxpayers, and we want to see it spent in a way that meets our needs. And so we conducted a fairly extensive and also still ongoing research exercise to find out what happened to the quantity and quality of services provided in Vermont to Vermonters. What is the impact on the people of Vermont of the government's funding decisions and of the restructuring of key human services agencies that we've seen? And as you said, in a nutshell, what we found is that the services are no longer adequate to meet people's needs. On the contrary, services and staff positions within human services agencies have been cut dramatically while needs increase, so that there was a huge gap is opening between what the people of Vermont need and what their government is providing to them. And the point that we're making is that this gap is not inevitable. This gap is, in fact, a denial of our human rights to healthcare, to housing, to education, to food. And there are very obvious solutions to that, and I hope we can discuss those in your show.
Well, actually, before we go any further, you talk about the state having human rights obligations. What you use a human rights framework to interpret all the massive data and the research that you've done. Tell us something about why you use a human rights framework and what that's based on in terms of international law and international standards.
Right. This is based on international law, much of which has been recognized in this country. We are committed to the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which says that we all have the right to a standard of living adequate for our health and well-being, and including all the basic needs that I've just mentioned. So that is something that the United States has committed to, and it has indeed just been reviewed by the United Nations, that we're falling way short of fulfilling those commitments. And then there's a whole other body of international law, some of which we're signed on to, others not, that sets out that we all have rights by virtue of being human beings, and that are not just political rights, the familiar rights that we know of, the right to vote, the right not to be tortured, but these are rights specifically that we need to actually live a life in dignity, the right to these economic and social services that we need, and to decent jobs. And so this has been, you know, a 60-year-old legal tradition, much of it we're committed to upholding, and we haven't done a good job doing so. And that's why we felt it was about time to review what the state of Vermont does to meet those human rights obligations. And I should add that the state is just as much committed to these human rights laws and standard as is the federal government. So there's no excuse there.
Yeah, I think I'd like to add also, there was an economic bill of rights that was promulgated by the FDR administration back in 1944. So this goes quite a ways back, and they posited that the political rights guaranteed by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights had, quote, proved inadequate to assure us equality in the pursuit of happiness. So they put forward a second Bill of Rights, which was to include rights like the right to a useful and a decent-paying job, the right to earn enough to provide adequate food and clothing, et cetera, the right of every family to a decent home, and on and on and on, and really sees these human rights as interconnected.
That's right, Robin, and that's very important to notice that it is, you know, it is something that past presidents of the United States have put forward, that is something that Martin Luther King fought for, that is this a very American tradition to understand that that life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness cannot happen unless we're able to eat and get medical care and have a home. So these things all go together, and there's it's about time that that's recognized by the current government.
Why don't we turn to Peg Franz now? She's chair of the Vermont Workers Center. You were one of the folks that was conducting the investigation and interviews with lots of organizations. Give a sense of how many groups you spoke to and what kind of conclusions were reached.
Thank you, Trevor. We interviewed 17 different nonprofits that range from people that work with people with the development of disabilities to working with people homeless, to working with the Refugee Resettlement Project. And what we found, and this is another person and myself, Diane Hannigan, a wonderful intern that we had. She's a UVM student, and she did a wonderful job working with us. And what we found, several themes, was that the demand on services is growing, faster than anybody anticipated. But the ability to provide services has decreased, especially because of the cuts in staff, both at the state level, but also within each agency. And then also each agency ends up doing triage or putting people on waiting lists. And across every program, they talked about one major issue is the lack of finding livable wage jobs and also of finding affordable, safe rental housing.
Indeed. I mean, one of the things that your report looks at is, well, we've got a, you know, a great recession, whatever you want to call it. You know, they talk about a recovery on Wall Street, but there's certainly no recovery out here for ordinary people. You looked at job creation and the kind of jobs that were being created and the lack of job creation going back even before the Great Recession started 3 years ago. What kind of conclusions did you reach there?
Anya, I think you wanted to talk about that.
Sure. I mean, there's, first of all, as you just mentioned, the job losses, that we've lost around 700 jobs in the state government at a time when the need for services has increased. So those jobs cannot meet those increased needs anymore and have created additional unemployment at a time, clearly, when too many people are unemployed. And that then has a ripple-on effect of losing all kinds of jobs in the private and nonprofit sector. So that in itself is a huge problem. But then also a more systemic issue is the lack of public job creation in Vermont. That is, we're cutting public services instead of investing in public services, which would really also create good jobs. And there's a lot of analysis done by that. We didn't have to reinvent the wheel to look into that, but we've had a recent report come out by the University of Massachusetts that found that long-term investment in public services and the use of special example of high-quality universal preschool, that this would generate over 14 times the number of jobs created by the incentives that private corporations receive. So they put that in figures. I mean, they said that annually private corporations in Vermont get tax breaks of $400 million, whereas and that there's no significant job creation or job growth associated with that the university could find. Whereas if we were to just spend $1 million on investing in early childhood services and universal preschool, we could create 40 jobs for each $1 million. And instead, we're spending $400 million and not really getting anything to show for.
Yeah, Anya is speaking in part to a failed economic development strategy, which has been pursued in Vermont for some years. And that relates to wasteful spending. I think that's what you're also speaking about there, that these are resources that could have been directed much more fruitfully elsewhere. Am I right?
That's correct. And that gets us to the whole, again, back to the human rights argument, that as long as the state does have resources, then they must provide for our needs. That's what we have come together as people to form a government so that the government provides for our needs. And so the human rights standards say they're obligated to use the maximum available resources to meet our needs. And unless they make every effort to secure and use those resources, then they're failing their obligations. And clearly, wasteful spending is one of the ways that you don't use the maximum resources for meeting people's needs. And there are lots of other areas where we can find wasteful spending, not just in corporate tax breaks, but also in the way our healthcare system is structured. You know, there's been a study that came out this year that we could have saved $1 million if Catamount had been the public healthcare program, if that had been administered by the government instead of by two private competing insurance companies. Corporations. So there's all that kind of waste that we need to look at when we talk about, well, what resources does Vermont have available? So that all needs to enter into our conversation around how much money does Vermont have. So we always hear about that we don't have enough money, but it's really not how much money can we actually see that's right there in our coffers, but what is it being spent on? And how is it being distributed? Is it being distributed fairly or not? So those are the kinds of questions we have to ask from a human rights standpoint.
Well, Peg, your report also looks at the question of transparency in Vermont, the ability of Vermonters to understand how their money is being spent and what this reflects in terms of our real priorities. What kind of conclusions did you reach about transparency, and what do you advocate in terms of accountability and participation?
Yes, Travin, we also found in talking with the different nonprofits that they were very frustrated by trying to get information about what was happening to their programs, and there hadn't been a level of transparency where they could understand where cuts were happening. And then we also talked to Public Assets, to Paul Siegel, and when we, at different times during this project, this preliminary project, and he kept referring to the fact that Vermont rates, and actually a study just came out that in transparency, that Vermont government is probably one of the poorer states. So what we want to do, and in talking with people and moving, you know, as part of human rights, is that there has to be accountability, there has to be transparency, and there has to be participation. And what we have been doing with the healthcare campaign to make it a human right and the principles be embodied in a healthcare delivery system, we are also trying to reach out and begin this project of looking at the budget from a human rights perspective, that the budget needs to be built from the basic understanding of what are the fundamental needs of people in Vermont. And we have been very successful in working with around the human rights issue of healthcare by going out and organizing and doing grassroots organizing and doing education and giving people the power, helping them understand if they get they get the information that they will have the tools then to work with their legislators to help them get the political will to change. So we had moving our next step. We are going to have a big people's assembly, a solidarity assembly on January 5th at the State House. We are first going to have a rally around our health care at 12:30 at the State House, and then we're going to move to the pavilion for a people's assembly where we're going to build an agenda and begin to build our movement to begin to look at the and get, demand that the budget be built on people's fundamental needs.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I know this people's movement assembly is well, this is perhaps a new thing in Vermont, but it's an attempt to bring together, you know, folks. You really using the kind of organizing that the Healthcare as a Human Rights campaign has done as a model. But you know, relate that to you know, how do we fight for livable wage jobs, paid sick days, safe working conditions, quality early education and affordable child care, disability rights, safe and affordable housing, fighting racism and all forms of oppression, and climate justice and a healthy environment. So there are folks from many social movements coming together in this People's Movement Assembly, which will be at the Pavilion Auditorium, which is right adjacent to the State House on January 5th. Let me ask, well, starting with Anya, but Peg, chime in. You addressed the question of revenue. You know, we're hearing that the estimated budget shortfall for this coming year is now risen to $150 million, perhaps even more, $160 million. That's about 11% of the general fund. And the governor is saying that any tax changes have to be revenue neutral. We see that no more federal stimulus fund are likely to come to help fill the gap. Medicaid subsidies to the state, which are significant, are being cut. How do we respond to this? How do we need to respond to this situation?
Well, our report clearly finds that being blind about revenue policies, not talk about revenue or tax reform, is an irresponsible position in light of human rights obligations. So we certainly hope that the governor-elect will reconsider that. There's two reasons we must consider tax reform. One is that we do need to secure all the resources we possibly can to meet Vermonters' needs. We cannot let this disgrace stand about people going hungry and homeless. Those are not values that Vermonters stand for. So that's why we need to look at increasing revenue. The other reason is that tax policy in Vermont currently is actually not fair and equitable. The tax burden falls mainly on lower income residents and therefore contributes to the inequities we see with some people not being able to meet their needs at all and even going hungry, and other people getting additional tax breaks and now from the feds as well. So there's those two reasons why this report found that we need to look into tax reform in Vermont and think about how we can reverse this very painful trend that wealthy people actually pay less taxes. I think it's around 60% less taxes than they paid 20 years ago, whereas the burden on working class and middle income people rises. And at the same time, we lack the money to meet our very basic fundamental needs that Vermonters have. So that's an unacceptable situation, and that's why this report is recommending that that we need to look at all available resources so that we don't prolong this backsliding in terms of economic and social rights.
You hold that thought. We've got a caller, Tom in Waterbury. Your thoughts?
Well, I was actually going to ask a question. I think that there's an immediate need for us to raise about $112 million. And so what specifically would this report recommend to the legislature in filling that gap? I know that over the last 2 years, we've had to cut like $300 million from the budget. So the governor's saying that we can't raise taxes, and he's also saying that he doesn't want to cut programs. So what does this report suggest? Thanks.
Well, thanks for the question. Peg, you want to start off with your thoughts about how we need to respond to this imperative, but with a governor that seems to say we're between a rock and a hard place?
I would try to pick up on what Anya has and you have just referred to about there's a lot of places in the budget where the funds have been misspent or misdirected, and we need to begin to look at that. And then there's also, I think, again, we haven't had the ability, because of the lack of transparency and also because we're just beginning the project, to really study the budget in depth. But there are definitely places where we think that that can be looked at, and we can move to providing services that really meet the fundamental needs. It's a huge issue, and it's about equity, and we need to look at that question. Is the government is here to meet the needs of all its citizens, and in times that are tough, we need to, at all times, there should be the question of equity in people's ability to pay and to help others that are not so fortunate.
Let me interject just to kind of piggyback on Tom's question. And of course, he was giving last week's figures, $112 million shortfall. Now it's up to $150 or $160 million, 11% of the general fund. You know, we've got this Blue Ribbon Tax Commission, which is going to come out officially with its report about mid-January, about the same time as the Dr. Shaw is going to issue his health care report, by the way. Probably not a coincidence. And they're evidently going to advocate that we cut taxes for the wealthiest, that the taxes are somewhat progressive, income taxes, at least compared to other states, and replace that with more sales taxes, taxes on services, which strikes me as moving Vermont in a even more regressive direction than we are now. What would be the human rights response to this situation? Anya, why don't you lead off?
Yeah, I think that would be a very crass human rights violation if that were to happen. I mean, we're already facing increasing impoverishment and inequities in Vermont, and if you wanted to make that even worse, that's exactly what you would do. You would give more tax breaks to the wealthy, and you would cut more services and increase the sales tax, That's what you would do if you wanted to worsen the situation and make people and further impoverish people and increase inequities. So what this report, what we're saying is that you need to rethink the entire approach to devising a state budget in Vermont. You need to not always look at protecting the wealthy and cutting services. You need to do exactly the opposite. You need to start from the principles of increasing equity and increasing a universal approach to meeting needs of Vermonters. So the three things you can do is you have a structural reform around healthcare. If you had a healthcare system that was fully publicly financed and administered, we would be saving millions and millions and millions of dollars each year. You have to stop the specific tax breaks for the wealthy and for corporations and instead increase taxes, increase the higher tax rates. And you need to actually invest in public services, both to meet needs as you're obligated under human rights standards and also to actually create jobs. And job creation is the only thing that's going to get us out of this recession, and the government could contribute to that by really investing in public services and infrastructure.
Well, we're going to have to wind it up there, but we've been talking with Anya Rudiger of the National Economic and Social Rights Initiative, which is collaborating with the Vermont Worker Center and just put out this report on December 10th on Human Rights Day, the People's Budget Report, Preliminary Findings. You can find this and download it for free or read it online at theworkercenter.org on their website. And I want to thank you very much for your work. It's this incredibly valuable report, very well footnoted, and obviously tied to an organizing project, which there'll be a lot more about after January 5th when we have this People's Movement Assembly at the Pavilion. Thank you very much for your work, and have a great holiday.
Thanks very much, Travin.